Hello, welcome to the self-learning platform by Dr. Sushma Singh. Today we start Unit 13, Agrarian Movements. Let us have introduction about the unit. Different agrarian classes have restored to collective action throughout the pre-independence and post-independence periods. The volume of participation of the classes, response of the state and success of the agrarian movement have depended on the nature of leadership, issues, patterns of mobilization, and the attitude of the authorities. These days, the agrarian movements are referred to as among the social movements. This unit discusses the agrarian movements, the reasons and context of their rise or fall, nature of issues taken up by them, nature of leadership, and patterns of mobilization. The basic focus of the unit is on those agrarian movements which took place in the post-independence period. However, in order to give the students a background to these movements, section 13.4 also discusses the essential features of such movements in the pre-independence period. Now let us discuss what are agrarian classes and meaning of agrarian classes. Agrarian movements include the movements of agrarian classes, which are related to agriculture in terms of working on the land or in terms of both working on land and its ownership. In other words, these are the movements of the agricultural laborers, poor and small peasants, tenants and farmers, kulaks, rich peasants, ruler rich. The issues taken up in the agrarian movements are generally economic, but in several cases the economic and social issues overlap. Such cases include where the agrarian class is both an economic and social group. For example, in the case of Dalits and women, the economic and social self-respect, dignity, and gender-based discrimination are also involved. Since we have studied about the movements of Dalits, backward classes, and women, focusing on the social issue in the previous units, this unit primarily focuses on the mobilization of agrarian classes on the economic issues. However, whenever necessary, even non-economic issues are discussed. Now we are going to discuss differentiation within the agrarian classes. Agrarian society is not a homogeneous unit. It is divided on economic and social basis. The mobilization of an agrarian group depends on the specific issues related to it. The collaboration between different groups or conflict among them also depends on the convergence of the group interest. Therefore, in order to understand the movements of the different agrarian classes, it is necessary to discuss the criteria to designate a particular class. There are two broad frameworks which are used by the scholars to differentiate or identify different agrarian classes are non-Marxian and Marxian. The advocates of the former take into consideration the multiple factors like caste, geographical zones, and size of land holdings to identify the agrarian classes. The classes which belong to low caste are usually identified as those belonging to the agricultural laborer or poor and small peasant, and those belonging to the high caste and middle caste are identified as belonging to the upper classes, rich peasants and landlords. The followers of the latter, the Marxian approach, consider the non-Marxian approach as unscientific and give an alternative framework. They argue that a scientific way to differentiate peasantry is to see the proportion of family labor power in relation to the outside labor power in working on the land, along with the ownership of the land. This criteria is based on the writing of Mao and Lenin. Usha Patnaik has synthesized the criteria of Mao and Lenin in her book Peasant Class Differentiation, a study in method with reference to Haryana. Patnaik's model has been used by some other scholars as well. According to this framework, those who do not own land but work on others' land or own smaller size of land holdings and work more on other land than on their own land belong to the classes of agricultural laborers and small and poor peasants. Those who own land and agricultural resources, employ agricultural laborers, poor and small peasants, or those who own land and do not themselves work on the land except for supervision but depend on the outside labor, are categorized as the ruler rich, middle peasants, rich peasants, and landlords. Usha Patnaik's model, however, is more applicable to the areas which have witnessed capitalism than those which still have predominance of feudal mode of production. In this unit, we have grouped the agrarian groups into the following classes. The first is the ruler poor, agricultural laborers, and small poor marginal peasants. Agricultural laborers do not own land but work on others' land for wages, either as agricultural laborers or tenants. Small, poor, marginal peasants have land, but it's not enough to meet the basic needs. They have to work on others' land also. And second is farmers, middle peasants, kulaks, rich peasants, ruler rich. These classes own land and other required paraphernalia in agriculture. They work on their land or do not work themselves except doing the supervisory work along with employing agricultural laborers. As we will study the last three decades of the 20th century saw the movements of a group of agrarian classes, which shared a lot of common characteristics, notwithstanding the reservation on the usage of these terms. This category has been addressed as kulaks, middle peasants, or the farmers. Now, the next point is approaches to study agrarian movements. Traditionally, there have been two approaches to study the agrarian movements, the Marxian and non-Marxian. The former analyzed these movements in the light of the social relations of production or the economic relations. How the poorer agrarian classes get mobilized against their exploitation by the exploiting classes. The latter give more emphasis to the cultural and non-economic factors. In the early 1980s, there was an addition to the Marxian approach. Influenced by the Gramsci's writings, this approach came to be known as the subaltern approach. Subaltern school has had the most profound impact on the study of the agrarian movements. It has been popularized by Ranajit Guha in the series of Subaltern Studies. This approach is critical of the classical Marxism, which gives primacy to the economic factors over other factors. The subaltern school argues that the peasants have their own consciousness, leadership, and other cultural factors which play much more important role than the class. The subaltern school is also criticized by classical Marxists as separating consciousness and culture from the economic structure and thus not giving the true picture of the reality. Rajendra Singh analyzes the secondary literature on the agrarian movements as part of the social movements in the post-Marxian perspective in his book Social Movements, Old and New, Postmodernist Critic. Next topic is agrarian movements in the pre-independence period. Ghanshyam Shah, while reviewing the literature on social movements in India in the book Social Movements in India, A Review of Literature, points out that political science has been averse to the people's participation in politics and movements. In the similar vein, a section of literature has categorized the peasants as passive and docile subjects, uninterested in participating in the movements. Barrington Murray Jr. is representative of this perspective. A large number of scholars disputed this view. Prominent among them include Kathleen Guha, A.R. Desai, D.N. Dangre, and Ranjit Guha. In fact, Kathleen Guha identified 77 revolts during the 19th and 20th centuries. Almost all regions of the country witnessed agrarian movements during the pre-independence period, popularly known as the peasant movements. These movements involved all exploited classes, tenants, agricultural laborers, artisans, etc. Ranajit Guha actually includes those landlords as exploited classes who were indebted to the moneylenders. Among the most prominent of these movements were Awadh Peasant Movement in UP, Kheda Movement in Gujarat, Mopila Movement in Malabar, Kerala, Champaran Peasant Movement in Bihar, Wahhabi, Farabi, and Tibhaga Movement of Bengal, and Telangana Movement in Madras Presidency's areas forming present Andhra Pradesh. When we compare the characteristics of these movements with those of the post-independence period, which are discussed in this unit, we will notice that there are differences in the issues, nature of leadership, ideologies, and pattern of mobilization in the agrarian movement of these two phases, pre and post independence. The pre-independence period movements can be termed as the anti-colonial movements as well, since these movements were against the classes which were supporters of the British Empire. The landlords, moneylenders, and other exploiting classes. The issue raised in these movements were related to the nature of agrarian relations. These relations were built on the exploitation of the agrarian classes, tenants, peasants, agricultural laborers, artisans, etc. In order to meet the requirement of the colonial forces and to satisfy their feudal needs, the landlords exploited them in several ways. These included unreasonable increase in the rent, forced gifts, nazranas or begars, forced labor, physical torture, insecurity of tenure. These problems were compounded by natural calamities like famines and flood, commercialization of crops, indebtedness. The failure to meet the economic and non-economic requirements of the landlords, the poor agrarian classes were not only evicted from the land they cultivated, they were also tortured physically. As mentioned earlier, the agrarian classes were not silent sufferers. They reacted to the exploitative system in different ways. These ways included both the ways which James Scott calls everyday form of resistance and in the form of organized peasant movements. The leadership of the peasant movements of the pre-independence period articulated the problems of the peasants and mobilized them into action against the landlords, moneylenders, and the British administration. The general point which emerges from a large number of studies is that the leadership of these movements came from the non-peasant classes. Kapil Kumar, in his book Peasants in Revolt, Tenants, Landless Congress, and the Raj in Awadh, indicates that though the leadership of the peasant movement did not belong to peasant as such, it ran parallel to the leadership of the national movement. In the course of time, with the merger of this movement with the national movement, the leadership of the peasant movement was taken over by the leadership of the national movement. Similar observation is made by scholars, some about the Champaran peasant movement. Religion, caste, nationalism, and Marxism provided ideological basis of the peasant during this phase. Religion and caste became the rallying points of the peasants in Awadh, Mopila, and Wahhabi and Faradi uprising. The uses of religion generated a debate among the scholars, one group of them categorizing such mobilization as communal, while other linking reason with the economic problems of the peasants. The attack on the Indian exploited classes, landlords and moneylenders, and participation of the peasantry in the armed insurgency in Telangana under the banner of the Communist Party of India are example of how ideologies of nationalism and Marxism contributed to the mobilization of the peasants in their movements. The movements took different forms: demonstration, destroying the properties of the landlords and money lenders, boycott of the landlords by the barbers and washermen. On several occasions, the movements resulted in violent clashes between the agents of landlords and police. The peasant movements of the pre-independence period had impact on the programs of the Indian National Congress. The Congress Socialist Group within the Congress, which included later generation of socialist, communist, and future Prime Minister of India, advocated the need for the drastic land reforms. The Congress appointed a committee to look into the distress of agrarian classes and to suggest measures to ameliorate their conditions. This had its impact on the agrarian policies of country when it became independent. As the land reforms became the state subject, depending on the willingness and political will of the leadership, land reforms became the subject to reckon with in the different states of India. Here we want to wind up this lecture. Thank you so much for your attention.